Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Tiziana Deering. Coming up on tomorrow's show, let me ask you, if you could pick one thing you love about Boston, what would it be? Well, WBUR's Ideas and Opinions page is collecting the answers in letters to Boston, and we're going to hear some of what you love and why with senior editor of Cognoscenti, Chloe Axelson. That's tomorrow's show. You're listening to Radio Boston. Let's go to the Museum of Fine Arts, where there's a photo exhibit highlighting women of the Black Panther Party. Women played an important role in the party, but some women in the photos, which were taken in the 60s and 70s, are unnamed. WBUR's Arielle Gray tracked down one of those women. This is the first time she has seen the photo in person.
The halls of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston are pretty much empty when I arrive with Gail Jones. We enter an exhibit, but she stops and turns to look at a photo. It's of a young Black woman in a black jacket. She's unnamed on the museum placard, but Jones recognizes her.
Oh my gosh, look at Franny smoking a cigarette. Oh my gosh. This is amazing.
We're at the museum to see a photo of Jones, her siblings, and friends that photographer Stephen Shames took in Boston over 5 decades ago. It's now a part of Comrade Sisters, an exhibit of Shames' photographs taken across the country that highlight women of the Black Panther Party. Shames was the official photographer for the Black Panthers. Jones was just 15 when the photo was taken.
I'm in total shock. I don't think I own a picture of me at that age.
Weeks ago, I visited the MFA to see Comrade Sisters. One photograph from Boston, titled Women of the Black Panther Party, caught my eye. I wondered who the 5 nameless teenagers in the photo were. I asked curator Karen Haas if she had any information.
So there are a couple pictures in the exhibition that were taken in Boston of unnamed, unfortunately. If anyone recognizes anyone, I'll be thrilled.
I posted the photo on Facebook. Within a day or two, one of the teenagers was identified as Gail Jones. Her son put us in contact. She was unaware the photo was in a museum.
That's my sister, Jacqueline. We call her Jackie. That's my brother, Fred. We called her Franny, but her name is Frances Phoenix. This is Eva Lorraine Phoenix, but we called her Rainey. And that's me, Gail Hayes Jones.
The Black Panther Party was a Black power organization started in 1966 by Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton. A few years later, Jacqueline and Frederick Hayes started volunteering for the Boston chapter. Jones joined her siblings after she experienced a tragedy. She found a friend dead of an overdose.
And so I started running with my brother and sister and Rainey and Franny. And when they started going to the Black Panther Party, it kind of something that gave me hope again, because that was a time when, oh, I'm getting emotional. But that was a time when you didn't go to counseling. People would say, oh, she's going to be all right. But I wasn't all right. And so this gave me purpose.
Jones would hand out party newspapers at a train station. Frederick and Jacqueline would get up before school to help run the free breakfast program for children.
And that's a lot of what we learned from the Black Panther Party, to serve the people, because there were so many people who were in need.
Around 65% of the party's membership was women. They had a hand in everything, from being in leadership positions to running free health clinics. Women experienced sexism within the party, but Jones says she didn't in the Boston chapter.
We were always at the forefront, making sure the work was getting done. But we were appreciated. They appreciated every day that we came.
The museum has added their names to the label of the photo. Seeing it is a full circle moment for Jones.
I'm glad that I can look back and see the work that we did at such a young age.
Gail Jones is retired now from her job at the Massachusetts Transit System. She says she plans on moving down south, where her sister Jacqueline is. Frederick, their brother, died in 2016. Eva Rainey Phoenix, one of the other women photographed, has dementia. Jones visited her and showed her the picture.
But she said, that's us, Gail. And I said, I know. I was so happy I was able to show her the picture because she recognized everyone. So that was another happy moment.
They're no longer just women of the Black Panther Party. The names and story behind the photo are now known.
WBUR's Ariel Gray reporting there. One out of every five. That is the number of teenagers that the Commonwealth says will go on to commit a second crime if they have committed a first. Now, one local program wants to change that ratio through music. It is a collaboration between the Berklee College of Music Online and the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services, and we wanted to learn more about it. We have two people here in Studio 2 to help us do that. Michael Moyes is an associate vice president at the Berklee College of Music, and Kobe Stewart is director of educational services for the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services. Michael, welcome.
Thank you so much, Tiziana.
And Kobe, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
So many questions to kind of set this up even. And so we'll do this part sort of rapid fire. The goal is to teach kids what, Michael?
Well, not just with incarcerated youth or students who are in these settings, but having one bad experience with education or formal learning can really negate any future possibility. And we found that music is one such vehicle that can be shared amongst everybody. It's a language that most of the world, arguably all of the world, can speak and feel passionate about. And it can serve as an entryway to reignite that passion for formal learning and develop some intrinsic motivation. So it seemed like the right marriage of discipline and opportunity to explore.
So Kobe, tell me about a kid where that's what's happened.
Well, we have a number of youth who are with us that have great experience with the Berklee program. I know that we were on an interview with one of our youth in particularly, and he was expressing how it inspired him, how he could make a connection between the genre of music that he was interested in compared to another genre that he had never listened to before. But this experience also, it helps them kind of ignite that passion that they have in music and have an opportunity to learn more about the business side and so many other aspects of music that they weren't aware of before they started. And it has so many layers, how it impacts them in a positive way. So, you know, the Berklee partnership is instrumental in their development. You know, we have a treatment-based model that we use for our youth. So it's not incarceration. They are our DYS youth, and we call them young people. You know, because they are young people.
12 to 18?
Yeah.
And how? What, 676 youth are in the care of, were in the care of Massachusetts DYS in fiscal 2022. So They're participating in programs, living at home, living in group settings.
Program settings and facilities where we provide a lot of programming for them. And that'll be educational, clinical, workforce development, what goes along with the partnerships in post-secondary education. We think that they deserve the opportunity to be involved in post-secondary education and experiences. Our commissioner, Cecily Reardon, has made a commitment to our educational team and our educational staff and providing opportunities for our youth because ultimately we want to give them the tools to be successful when they leave us.
So we pulled from an article actually written at the university at Berklee of Mackay C. from Dorchester, mm-hmm. a student at a program operated by the Department of Youth Services, completed his second course recently, said, quote, "Music helped me cope through a lot of struggles I went through in my community, like losing friends, stuff like that. I made a song about my friend that passed away, and it was deeper than I would think. It showed me not only just the aspects of myself, but it showed me how influential music is in my life." Michael Moyes, big smile on your face. You're nodding like crazy. You're on the Berklee side, so just pick up the ball there.
This is why we're doing this work. It's not uncommon to have an oversized focus, although extremely important, on workforce development skills, getting credentials, getting your GED or equivalency, and getting those credits, because you can see in the statistics there's a likelihood that you're going to have a greater earnings potential. But what we want to do is plug music into that and make sure that arts education has a space in that conversation. Life is more about just paying your bills and being a product of society, but to really live a life of purpose. And music's the hook that can make that happen.
So I'm going to pull a little bit of sound here for very good reasons, Kobe. Okay. We could not speak to the young people, right, in the program for their privacy and the age they are, et cetera. So, but we wanted to get some other voices here. So Grammy Award-winning artist Common has launched a similar music program. There are a couple differences. It's for adults, and it's for adults who are incarcerated. That program is at the Stateville Correctional Center, which is in Illinois. Here's Yarmel Thomas, who's an inmate at Stateville, talking to CBS in 2021 about the argument that music is a privilege, right, and that should be withheld, which is the pushback here. And we're going to pick up on that. Here's Yarmel.
People judge us based upon that one bad, terrible moment in our lives. A lot of us are no longer that person. You can't just throw people away. I mean, what God didn't throw, everybody makes mistakes. He didn't throw them away. Don't throw us away. Just give us our opportunity.
And again, you're both nodding. We're here with Michael Moyes of Berkeley, Kobe Stewart of Department of Youth Services, looking at this Berkeley online program, helping kids who are engaged with Department of Youth Services in the juvenile justice system use music as a platform for a lot of things, it sounds like, Kobe.
Yeah, I mean, many of them expressed the interest, right, and the passion for music. But I was, you know, talking to Michael earlier, and it really can unlock the door to potential of creativity, but also spreading beyond just the classroom. This is them, they're going back into the community, they're interacting with college professors. We know that navigating that space is very difficult because many of our youth are first generation students, and they're young folks who have had challenges academically prior to coming to DYS. So it inspires them. It also inspires some of their peers, right? Because this partnership hasn't been around for 20 years. You know, this is fairly new. So a lot of our youth who are involved in the partnership now and taking these classes, they inspire their peers that they come in contact with, which can inspire more academic achievement and just a positive feeling amongst our youth, you know, to be more involved with post-secondary education and aspire to even get a college degree.
Show them a different way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Michael, I mean, music, we're talking about really important stuff here, right? We're talking about statistics. We're talking about future for kids. We're talking about how they're meeting the juvenile justice program and youth services in the state. We're talking about all these important data things. But I have kids. And one of the other things that I know is when a kid can make something and it's authentic to them and it's done and they've got this final product, that's just empowering in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And music, it seems like it's complex to make. I have a kid who's a musician. It seems like it's complex to make. So this is, tell me what's happening in these classes.
Sure. It can be complex, much like artwork can be complex. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's not rocket science. Having something tangible, whether you're writing a song or producing a song or performing and recording yourself with others, it's something you can take away with you long after the educational experience, something that you can feel proud of, even if you never make a dollar in the music industry or if your terminal degree is nothing to do with music. You always have that cool factor, making something, you know, that you can call your own.
So let's go back to the example of Mackay, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, is it everybody takes the same first class online?
No.
Or are there lots of selections?
So we're in an experimental phase at this point. We've taught about 100 students through DYS, and we've had a number of facilities across the country as well. But the Massachusetts being in our backyard is it's our biggest program so far. And we've experimented with different courses, some classes in songwriting, some courses in developing artistry, some courses in music production, and they all have decidedly different flavors. We found that most of the students resonate with music production analysis because you're not just looking at music that they're familiar with, although we have bridged the gap and our faculty are really brushing up on their little Dirk and Rilo Rodriguez and Kendrick Lamar, but we're also looking at Bonnie Raitt and we're looking at Don Was. And I was really thrilled when I went to a DYS facility recently and we're talking about students' favorite artists, what they like learning. And they're talking about indie rock. They're talking about Ed Sheeran and really finding a way to synthesize great production and great recording techniques from all disciplines.
Lots of different genres of music.
And incorporating it into their own work, which comes through in their songwriting classes, where these kids have tons of notebooks where they're writing their day-to-day experiences, reflecting and putting themselves into the world, but then organizing it in a way where they can communicate what is in their heart via music.
So
broadening
Kobe,
their
yeah.
horizons, just to piggyback off of that, they're broadening their horizons, but it's also, it can also be therapeutic for them, you know, and just getting some of those feelings and some of that thought process onto paper and to be able to express it through music can be very therapeutic in a sense.
So we're here with Kobe Stewart, who's with the Department of Youth Services here in the state, Michael Moyes, who's with Berklee College of Music. We're looking at this work that Berklee is doing here with DYS and other places around the country, helping kids make music while they're involved in the juvenile justice system with an eye towards change. Change in their lives, change in their sense of future, Kobe, right? Change mm-hmm. in their ideas about what's possible, where they belong, what they can do. Mm-hmm. You know, in a past life when I was teaching in a school of social work, I had a colleague who did a lot of work on future thinking for kids. And the idea in sociology that it's super powerful for a kid to actually be able to see a future for themselves. Do you see that when kids learn how to make music?
Absolutely. To me, it's we're providing access. Right, to students who may not have normally have seen themselves as being able to be a college student, which can, you know, create a different way of thinking and have a success pattern for them. You know, we talk about students who have engaged in post-secondary education and then aspire to get a college degree. Once they get their high school diploma and aspire to get a college degree, education is the key to success, right, in many different areas. So It is impactful, you know, for them to have access. And I think that's the biggest thing right now is us providing those opportunities for them. And once they get it, it can just ignite a passion for just not just creative expression, but also learning in education.
So, Michael Moyes, let's flip this on its head.
Yeah.
This is an encounter, right, between people who are teaching and people who are learning.
Mm-hmm.
What have you heard from people who are teaching about how the kids have changed them?
What a great question. So teaching this population is very different from our typical population. You know, I'm a big believer, although Kobe says he doesn't think he can learn music, that anybody, any age, no matter where you are, what language you speak, you can learn music at a high level, even if you're in a facility, you know, anywhere. So the professors have had to adjust a good bit. There are different rules and
because
stipulations.
Because Berklee students already know music when they
Well, they already
in.
Know music, but then there's also the logistical challenges of facilitating a course in a carceral setting, which
yep.
has very big challenges. And it can be difficult for the faculty to feel that connection with the students. But when talking with them, we've adopted that approach of you're not going to necessarily have all 20 students in your class thank you and shake your hand at the end, but you might have one student who you made a significant difference in their life, and that is going to spread in a positive way, like Kobe was saying. So focusing on that, and we've seen tremendous energy from our faculty at Berklee Online being energized by this.
All right. Michael Moyes is an associate vice president at the Berklee College of Music. Kobe Stewart is director of educational services for the Massachusetts Department of Youth Services. This has been so interesting. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.